8 minutes.
Call the House Committee on Judiciary to order, April 14th, 2011. We got a lot of bills. We're going to let you know which ones are going to be carried over because they're not ready. And then we'll start at the top of the agenda. So on the first page, we're going to carry over 3594, 2103, 2141. Also, 2183, which is on the second agenda, will also be carried over. And we'll go back to the top of the agenda. 2174. We'll open a hearing and work session.
Oh, start with 32.
Okay, so oh, no, let's do that. If I could, we're going to get this one done out of the chief section.
All right.
And we have the anything on that bill?
It's ready to go. Okay. So this is the work session. Maybe on the back. Maybe on the back.
A reminder, we're going to be a work session on the bill.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2174 makes modifications to the regulation of hydrocodone, methadone, and oxycodone within the current regime of prosecution of unlawful possession. It makes explicit that these crimes are subject to enhancement factors for distribution to a minor for operation within 1,000 feet of a school. It also adds the purpose of training to the list of purposes for which monies in the illegal drug cleanup fund may be used, and it clarifies provisions within the Board of Pharmacy scheduling that allows the splitting out of Schedule 5 drugs. It comes to us from Health. It was amended over there, 2174A, and it is projected to have a minimal fiscal impact statement.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2174A to the floor to do pass.
Representative Parker has moved 2174A to the floor to do pass. Any discussion on the bill? No objections? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Open work session, a public hearing on House Bill 3204. Representative Thatcher.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3204 would modify the reporting requirements which apply to a sex offender convicted or adjudicated in Oregon. Specifically, a sex offender who does not reside in Oregon but who is either working or attending school in Oregon would be required to report such to the relevant authorities within 10 days of the first day of school or 10 days of the 15th day of employment. This individual would also be required to notify those authorities in the instance to any change in the person's school enrollment or employment status within the state of Oregon.
Thank you. I'm Kim Thatcher, State Representative from Kaiser St. Paul and Newburgh. And I know you have an extremely busy schedule. I'll try to make this really quick. I believe this bill will close a big gaping loophole that's in state law regarding sex offenders. Anyway, here's how the law works now. If you're convicted of a sex offense in Oregon that requires you to also register as an offender in Oregon, and then you subsequently move to, say, Vancouver, you now live in Washington State, and you now under Washington law, you register as a sex offender in Washington State. But suppose you still drive across the Columbia River and work or go to school in Oregon. Under current Oregon law, you do not have to register as a sex offender in Oregon. You're not part of the Oregon, the sex offender registry. But on the other hand, if you lived in Washington and committed a sex offense in Washington State that required you to register there, you would have to register here if you were crossing the Columbia River to come to go to work or go to school. So It's just a loophole. I think this bill fixes it, and I would appreciate passage.
Ready? Do you have any questions? Looks like you've convinced everybody.
Okay, cool. Okay. Thanks.
Ryan Bates, state police. Please.
Chair Krieger, Co-Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, Vi Beatty, Oregon State Police Sex Offender Registry Manager. Imagine our surprise, or my surprise, last fall when I was reading through statute, and which unfortunately is one of my bad habits. And I found out that persons convicted in Oregon who no longer live in Oregon but work or attend school in Oregon don't have to register, because for the past 15-plus years, we've required people to do that. So we sent out 49 letters to persons predominantly living in the state of Washington who were attending school and working in Oregon that they no longer had a requirement to report to Oregon authorities that they had to register. And then we refunded money. Attached to the written testimony, I've outlined and highlighted, I hope, 181597, which we thought covered this. And under 181597, it said that reporting by certain non-residents and certain residents. So when a person moves into the state, they have to register if they meet the elements, or they have to register in their state of conviction. When they attend school or work in this state, if they're identified under subsection 2. So what we did is we looked under subsection 2, and it says a person convicted in another United States court of a crime if the elements of the crime would constitute a sex crime. Well, if someone was convicted in Oregon under definitions, they're not convicted in another United States crime or court. And then it said a person found by another United States court to have committed an act while they were a juvenile. Well, again, if they were adjudicated in Oregon, they don't meet that criteria. And then a person required to register in another state for having committed a sex offense in that state didn't meet that criteria either. So we had a conversation with Representative Thatcher, and she very kindly moved this bill forward for us. For a hearing so that we could plug this loophole and catch these people. One of the persons living in Washington is a predatory sex offender. He does work in the Portland metropolitan area, and currently he is off our grid, though he is on the Washington residency grid. That's all I have. I'm available for any questions.
Questions, committee? Okay, thank you. We don't have the fiscal on us. We'll have to carry it over. Until tomorrow, we're going to name what day, I guess, from now on, what day they're going over to. So we'll close the public hearing on 3204. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3075. Representative Thatcher.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3075. Creates an interlock, an ignition interlock requirement for individuals who are participating in a DUII diversion program. There is a dash 3 amendment that is being advanced by the proponents. It replaces the bill, but the salient changes are as follows. First of all, it makes the installation mandatory for all individuals in diversion. Second of all, it makes violation of these conditions a Class A traffic violation. Third, it removes the discretion to suspend this program for the reasons of insufficient monies in the Intoxicated Driver Program Fund. Fourth, it puts a duty on the individual, well, on the organization that installs the ignition interlock device to notify the court or the court's designee if there's any evidence of removal of the device or tampering with the device. And finally, it modifies the fee structure for how this would be paid, increasing the baseline costs located in Section 3 to $155, waivable if in the instance of an indigent defender, and then it details how that will be subdivided.
Is
This bill does carry a fiscal impact, and as amended on the dash three. To quote briefly from that, this raises some fees, and the average number of offenders who actually pay this fee is approximately $38,000 per biennium. This includes those who would have a diversion agreement. The fee increase would raise revenue from roughly $945,000 to 1.9 million other funds per biennium. Of this amount, $276,000 would go to the support of IIDs, and the balance, $669,000, would be available for treatment and other related services. The Legislative Fiscal Office believes this measure warrants a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for further consideration of the budgetary impact on the Oregon Health Authority's budget.
Ready for me? Kim Thatcher, excuse me, I'm Kim Thatcher from House District 25. Thank you. Representative Hunt and I have been working together to make, I believe, this bill a bit better. Like I said, still will these amendments will still require anybody who's under diversion to install the ignition or lock device once they have their driving privileges restored, and these amendments will still impose the Class A traffic infraction if someone is not following the law while on diversion with the IID device. This amendment will now require the people who install the ignition interlock device to send notice to the court or the court's designee to let them know when the device has actually been installed, so it adds some accountability, or when it's been uninstalled, or if there's been any kind of tampering going on, which they can detect a lot of times. We have worked with the court administrator's office on this language, and we believe there is no fiscal impact because in almost all the cases, the ignition interlock device vendors will be sending reports to the diversion coordinators in each jurisdiction. You should have a note in your files from the diversion coordinator for Washington County in support of this reporting and accountability requirement. And also behind me, we have a diversion coordinator here to speak briefly to the bill. Finally, these amendments have proposed a modest fee increase to be paid by the DUI offenders, and a portion of this fee money is used to provide subsidies to help indigent people who can't afford the cost of installing and maintaining these devices. Currently, a person will pay, who's on diversion, pays about $450 in court fees, and the minimum amount for court fees per person convicted of DUII is around $1,300. The maximum is over $6,000, and that's not including the higher insurance. I mean, it's pretty darned expensive to get convicted in the state. This $25 increase is of the fee money is earmarked in statute for the Intoxicated Driver Program Fund at DHS, which covers a number of things, including the ignition interlock devices for indigent folks. So we have worked hard with the DHS people to ensure that there is enough money to cover the cost of any additional offenders who may be accessing this fund to help pay for the IIDs, and I believe that raising it much more could be counterproductive. The committee has a handout we submitted for your consideration, which has a breakdown of the revenue raised by the $25 increase. It essentially doubles the amount of money in the fund to $1.9 million, and of that, $530,000 would be used for ignition interlock, and the rest could be used for treatment or the other services covered in that fund. I believe that means that the agency would have I think you probably have a sheet. I can't remember the exact number, but it was between $600,000 and $700,000 more than they have currently in their budget for treatment and other services. We would like to keep this fee to a minimum because we have concerns that going much higher could jeopardize the bill's ultimate success on the floor. And finally, I should mention that we, in addition to reduce the fiscal impact to zero, we have support from a number of groups, including Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, the Governor's Account Advisory Committee on DUII, the Oregon District Attorneys Association, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police, and Association of Chiefs of Police, Oregon Impact, and Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Is the Washington County Diversion Coordinator here?
Clackamas.
Is this?
Yes, Clackamas. You have a letter from Washington County.
Do you need to come up and say anything that we need to know that she hasn't covered?
Mm-hmm.
Co-Chair Krieger, Co-Chair Barker, committee members, my name is Teresa Douglas. I am a member of the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, and I'm also the Diversion Coordinator for Clackamas County. And we have been working with Representative Thatcher on these amendments. And the reason that the amendment for changing it to the court's designee would be beneficial is that each court has their own process arranged with their evaluators, so it may be that the burden of that paperwork on the court would be a little too much. But as an evaluator, the diversion coordinator, I'm already monitoring their compliance with their diversion, and so if there was some non-compliance, that would start with my agency to begin with. So it makes sense for the court to be able to work it out within their system as to who those reports would go to.
Okay, any questions, the committee?
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this must go to Ways and Means, is that true?
Co-chairs, Representative Tomei, legislative fiscal has made a recommendation that this go to Ways and Means, that it didn't come referred with that from the leadership at the time the bill came in.
So we could dispense with it?
And co-chairs, Representative Tomei, my understanding, we had a discussion about this a couple of days ago, and I think the ultimate answer is that while a fiscal recommendation for a referral to Ways and Means should have some weight, it's not binding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thatcher, I really appreciate all the work you've done, and also I'm trying to keep the cost down so that this does have a better chance of success on the floor. And when you were mentioning the amount of $1,300 for a drunk driving conviction, and I just would, as I've done before, I'd just like to remember that should that person have hit somebody and injured them or killed them, the cost to the victims is so high, and that's what we're really trying to prevent here. And not only the dollar cost, but the emotional cost of a family losing a member, or especially if it's absolutely the breadwinner, if that's the right term anymore. But, so thank you. I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 3s into House Bill 3075.
Co-Chair Barker has moved the dash 3 amendments into House Bill 3075. Any discussion on the amendments? Objections? The amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, we have some direction about moving it to Ways and Means, and there's also some question as to the amount with the dash 3s, I would like to move House Bill 3075 to the floor, as amended, to the floor with the due pass, and we can take a further look at that as it moves across the building. And if it needs to go to Ways and Means, we'll work with Senator Posansky's committee.
Okay, Representative Barker has moved House Bill 3075 as amended to dash 3s to the floor, with consideration that in the process of going to the Senate, it may have to go to Ways and Means after it gets over there. Any discussion?
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
I reach a different conclusion than the estimable co-chair from Washington County. And if the motion were to send it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, I would join. But if it's going to the floor, I don't think I can support that at this time.
Okay. Any other objections? Call roll.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Wiesman?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Harris?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
House Bill 3075, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass. Let's have Representative Hunt, and you want to carry it with him? Be all right. Thatcher, then.
That's correct.
Open a work session on House Bill 2104.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2104 increases the fee required for persons convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants and persons entering the DUII diversion program. Funds for this fee would be routed to the Director of Oregon Health Authority, or OHA, for deposit in the Intoxicated Driver Program Fund. There is a dash one amendment. 2104, as amended, will increase the fees paid by persons who are subject to these convictions from $130 to $230, and raises the portion going to OHS or OHA from $25 to $125. There is a fiscal impact to this legislation. The passage of this bill is anticipated to generate an additional $2,679,200 in revenue for the 2011-2013 biennium and $3,782,400 for the 2013-2015 biennium. This revenue would be dedicated to the Intoxicated Driver Program Fund. It's anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact on Judicial Department. There'd be some one-time expenses associated with the modification of forms. However, there will be a revenue impact, and this bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
We didn't have anyone sign that.
No, this is just a work session, okay. And we do need to adapt the dash one.
Mr. Chair, move the dash ones in House Bill 2104.
Joker Barker has moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 2104. Any objections to the moving of the amendments? If not,
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2104 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2104 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion? Objections?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do favor this going to Ways and Means for further probing into the question. I am perceiving the difference between this bill and 3075 is that 3075 had reportedly a net neutral impact to the state. This bill reportedly is going to be an increase in revenue. There's a fundamental distinction there, and I think the reason is also that now in 3075 we have required the interlock devices on everybody, whether indigent or otherwise, whereas in this bill, indeed, treatment is required. However, technically, a person can get through their entire DUI experience without getting treatment. They would just have to do basically more jail time. And so it's a little bit more of a nuanced issue, and so I do vote to send this to Ways and Means, but I do also intend to further this conversation once it lands there.
Representative Nolan? Yes. Representative Olson? Aye. Representative Chocolate? Aye. Representative Tomei? Aye. Representative Wong? Aye. Representative Lisbon? Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Garrett? Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
The House Bill 2104 will go to the Ways and Means.
He's excused.
Yeah. We will open a work session on House Bill 2142.
Oh, you missed.
2141 is being carried over.
Okay. That's what I
missed. Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2142 has to do with the admissibility of a partial drug recognition evaluation, or DRE, and the evidentiary purposes to which that partial or complete drug recognition evaluation can be used as evidence. There are two amendments to this bill which we are considering. First of all is the Dash 2. The Dash 2 modifies Section 2 of the bill. It maintains the provision requiring the Department of State Police to adopt rules as prescribed by the International Association of Chiefs of Police regarding what constitutes a drug recognition evaluation. It also instructs courts that at the trial of any civil or criminal action, evidence of individual tests or observations that are components of a partial DRE are admissible as non-scientific evidence if the officer who administered the test was properly qualified and the test was administered properly and recorded accurately. The Dash 3 amendments make one change. In line 2, or line 12 of the printed bill, the word is replaced with may be. In context, instead of saying that these will be admissible, that it is admissible, we're saying that it may be admissible. The intention of that is to allow other judicial considerations such as relevance, prejudice to come into play and not give the courts the perception that we are ordering an evidentiary decision. Both of these amendments carry a minimal expenditure impact. Yes, 2 and 3.
Yes, Dina Ryerson here. Could you come up, please? Could you please inform us what we need to know?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger. My name is Dina Ryerson with the Oregon Department of Justice. It's a little confusing as far as how this ended up turning up, but what was discussed and agreed by and by the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI and after the work group met was the language and discussions with co-vice chair Representative Garrett's aide and Gail Meyer with the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association is the Dash 2 amendments was the final language in the bill. Unfortunately, the paragraph 3 from the Dash 1 amendments were not included in the Dash 2, and I'm not sure why. This is the first day that I've seen these amendments, and the paragraph 3 was supposed to be added to the Dash 2 amendments. And I know that Chuck Hayes with the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI is here, and I believe has indicated that at least the Governor's Advisory Committee does not agree with the Dash 3 amendments, as they would not, in essence, change the law.
Putting the Dash 1s and 2s in doesn't get it done, because part of the Dash 1s aren't in.
Right, so the Dash 2 is correct. All that needs to be added is paragraph 3 from Dash 1. If that makes sense. And I'm not sure why it wasn't added. That was what was anticipated when Legislative Council received the language.
We should carry this over.
Yeah, we should carry this over. Yeah. What we're going to do is give you time to get together, to get those two amendments combined the way they're supposed to be properly, so it includes that. And then we'll bring it back. So we'll close the work session today, but we will carry the bill over till tomorrow or Monday sometime in the future.
Before you do that, it sounds to me like there is not just a scribing issue, there's a policy question.
Yes,
as well.
we'll be looking at that too.
About whether indeed the legislature wants to direct the admissibility of.
And Representative Garrett, weren't you involved in the...
Yes, Mr. Chair, and my support of this is conditioned on the legislature not taking away judicial discretion to rule on admissibility. And I think the Dash 3 is necessary. We may have a lingering disagreement on that, but I'm happy to work with
Dina. Take that task on
that? Yeah, we'll get that taken care of.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Indeed, I don't think there's a philosophical issue between Representative Garrett and the proponents here. I think that everyone would agree that the court should still be is still permitted to rule in standard evidentiary, but it's a question of the language. So it is a little bit technical. We need to get to the appropriate language. There is a significant disagreement right now about the language. Whether that's going to be resolved between now and Monday is a little bit iffy, but I do agree that the dash three amendments, my reading of that is it's not going to provide sufficient guidance to the judiciary in evaluating this question.
Well, we'll have time to get it fixed, and so the hearing is closed on it. It's going to be carried over. It probably won't get done until Monday or Tuesday by the time they get done getting the amendments ready.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 2253.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2253 has to do with the type of oath which is necessary when you want to establish a lien for certain non-possessory chattel. Again, it's services, labor, or materials, and you're filing lien for that purpose. Presently, you're required to do this under a formal oath. This bill proposes to replace that with an attestation of the facts under a penalty of perjury, so you wouldn't actually need the notary. This bill also pertains to the registration of consular corps and public officials with the Secretary of State. Section 3 forbids the Secretary of State from certifying the signature of a notary public if they want to renounce the government. They want to claim that the government has no jurisdiction over them. There was an amendment that was introduced at the time of the public hearing, the Dash 1 Amendment. It was explained to you at that time, but as a reminder, it expanded the terms of this bill to agricultural services liens. As amended by the Dash 1, this legislation would have no expenditure impact.
And we do need to adopt the bill. And yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1s in House Bill 2253.
Chair Barker has moved the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2253. Discussion on the amendments. Objections? About the amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2253 as amended to the floor to be passed.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2253 as amended to the floor to do pass. Any discussion on the bill, the amendments together? If not, call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye. Representative Warren. Aye. Representative Liz.
Aye.
Representative
Barker.
Aye.
Barker.
Barker.
Yes.
Aye. Thank you.
Okay, House Bill 2253. Moved as amended. We'll go to the floor. Representative Hicks, will you carry the bill?
Charlie.
We'll set these over at the end for now. 2662.
May not be ready. We're going to move that to the end. We're waiting for something to come
in. Okay, in that case, next up would be
2691. Open a work session on House Bill 2691.
Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2691 was previously heard on the first, briefly opened on the 13th, and on and set for today. Revenue and fiscal statements have issued on both Dash 3s and Dash 5s, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This is the measure that, in its original form, provided for some court closures and permitted the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to consolidate court processes. In the subsequent amendment, the Dash 3s and the Dash 5s, the consolidation provisions of the measure and the court closures provisions were removed. And I believe that Mr. Miller from Judicial Department, he is present today to explain further if the committee so desires. The Dash 3 amendment, which replaces the measure, permits the court to establish procedures to consolidate probation violation proceedings set against one defendant in multiple circuit courts,
requires the court to appoint a chief judge of the Court of Appeals and a presiding judge in each judicial district according to its terms. It permits the court to designate acting chief judge and acting presiding judge while such appointments are pending. It modifies the prima facie affidavit requirements in dissolution cases involving child support that are duplicative. It modifies renewal of shorthand reporter certification, allows the state court administrator to set reasonable fees for testing. It allows the court to establish reasonable fees for remote access to information and other electronic services. It allows the court to call the judicial conference and removes the requirement for reimbursement for participation in same. Requires Court of Appeals to make rules to require participation in the mediation program and payment of the mediator fee. Permits the court to intercept funds from any state or federal agency to apply toward a debtor's obligation to the court. Clarifies that any judge pro tempore in the circuit court may issue arrest and search warrants if a regularly elected or appointed judge is not available to issue same within a reasonable time. The Dash 5 amendment is a separate amendment tendered by Representative Wand, requires the court in Gresham to accept civil filings. It comes from the Oregon Judicial Department, as I said, to streamline and clarify in anticipation of e-court.
Thank you. 2691. Mr. Chair, Senator Krieger, I'd like to move the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 2691.
Representative Krieger moves the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 2691. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to also move the Dash 5s into House Bill 2691.
Representative Krieger moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 2691. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2691 as amended with the Dash 3s and Dash 5s to the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2691 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative
Nolan.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Wong.
Aye.
Representative Lopez.
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair
Dick.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Motion carries. Open a work session on House Bill 2692.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2692 comes to us from the Sheriff's Civil Command Council. It pertains to garnishment and does a number of things within that realm. Representative Schaffler may recall that it makes identification documents not subject to garnishment, provides that a sheriff is not liable to a garnisher or debtor for the loss of damage to property, that is not delivered to the sheriff if there is a pending sale of property. It allows the sheriff to take possession of identification documentation that is located within a safe deposit box, but makes clear that the sheriff cannot sell those documents in satisfaction of a debt. It allows the establishment of legal notice of a legal notices website in cooperation between sheriff's departments, but modifies the requirement that all sheriffs work together in the formation of this website and instead requires only a majority of sheriffs. It allows a judgment debtor to pay monies owing under a writ of execution at any time before the delivery of a bill of sale for personal property, and if that happens, the sale would be halted. This is the intro version of the bill, and it is projected to have no expenditure impact. No amendments. It's the intro version.
Committee. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2692 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2692 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Olson? Aye. Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Wong? Aye.
Representative Lisman?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair here?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Shoffler, would you carry that for us, please?
I'd be honored to, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Everybody knew that was coming, didn't they?
These guys back there.
All right.
Open a work session on House Bill 3068.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3068 would permit the state to appeal to the Court of Appeals from either a justice court of record or a municipal court of record. It is projected to have minimal expenditure impact. And this is the introductory version of the bill.
Mr. Knott, did we hear from the courts on this one?
Give me a moment. Here, 3068.
We want to stand at ease. And co-chairs, Chair Barker, at the time of the public hearing on the 4th of April, my records show we heard from one individual, the City of Attorney of Beaverton, speaking in favor of this bill, which he characterized as a technical fix. Having to do with the fallout from a Court of Appeals decision, Machuca.
Okay, thank you.
I think that's a different
deal. Any discussion, committee, on House Bill 3068?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3068 to the floor if it do pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3068 to the floor if it do pass. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Wolf?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll carry that bill.
All right. Now we're going to set vote. Is it Hershey and Schaefer couple that are flooding? Let's carry over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to tomorrow.
Okay.
That hasn't been done yet. All of them that say CO.
Okay. We're going to carry over House Bill 2650. House Bill 2693, House Bill 2694, House Bill 2705, House Bill 3239, and House Bill 3295 until tomorrow. House Bill 2648 and House Bill 2662. Okay. No further business to come before the committee today. Committee adjourned. So does any